Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that seven-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. Hope you're having a great day. You are listening to or watching the Service Business Mastery podcast. I am one of your hosts, Tersh Blissett, sitting across the table from my co-host, Joshua Crouch. And we are at Service Freedom, Home Service Freedom.
I can't wait till you try to say his name.
Home Service Freedom event, Tommy Mello's event. It's Sebastian.
Yeah.
Jimenez.
Yeah, we got it right. Got
Sebastian it. Jimenez.
Yes, sir.
With real low voice. And
we got it. Good, that was great.
Good news is Sebastian, I mean, he's on the podcast with the sexiest voice, talking about voice AI, voice...
Correct. Voice AI. AI related to voice.
AI related to voice. I
AI
like
related
that.
To your speech, yeah.
So, but before we get started with that, how long have you been doing this? Like 3 years or
my company?
Yeah.
So I've been, my mom calls me like intentionally unemployed because I've been doing startups since I graduated college.
Yes.
So I started my first company when I was 22, 2018. And I started Rilla late 2019. So It's almost 4 years, right?
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was telling you last month when we were in Phoenix, but I seen two of your team members at the Service World Expo the previous year.
Yeah.
And it was like last second, like they had a pop-up.
It's a kangaroo shop, man. We had like a bamboozle booth. It probably like looked like one of those vague, like old motel signs. Be like, hey, stop here. Book here. We got like,
it was
we had like
that,
one
it was
intern
like,
doing the show,
it,
man.
It was like in a corner, but it wasn't, you weren't like away from everything. But it was...
They put it next to the toilets, yes.
Next to the toilets.
Yeah, smell like piss, that, they told me.
Well, the thing about it is
I scale up, man.
I was able to find you because I had to go
you
take
had to
a
go
piss.
Take a, you had to go take a piss, man. That, great marketing.
Getting a booth, sometimes you think about that, like, well, everyone's going to have to go to the bathroom at some point, so I'm going to just get a visibility.
But then you have to deal with smell like piss all
yeah,
day.
Yeah, you got to book those demos fast, man, because you can't keep people for too long. It smells like piss out there, you know?
Right. So I've seen them, and I thought it was an amazing concept, but then I got so busy, I was like, oh, shit. Like, I seen you again last month, and I was like, oh, shit.
ChatGPT had not come out yet.
Oh, yeah.
Fully.
It had just come out. That's right. Literally, it came out in October last year.
I wasn't a super nerd in that at that point in time, and now I am. Like, that's all Josh and I really talk about.
Oh, you kidding,
really.
Man. You've been a super nerd the whole time I met
you. Yeah, well, yeah.
So it's like, don't blame it on ChatGPT, man.
You're right.
So right before we were going to go on, I was asking Sebastian his background, and he told me something interesting. So you want to go into that, like what you did before this?
Yeah, man. So I used to do stand-up comedy. People always ask me this question that you asked me. I was like, how the hell do you go from stand-up comedy to like doing an AI software, man? It sounds like a bad joke, which it is. My mom does not find it funny at all, man. I'll tell you that. She'd be like, you just like pissing off your parents, man. We sent you off to college and you want to be a community clown and now you just want to be unemployed. What the hell is the startup? She doesn't even know. I'm from the Dominican Republic. When I realized that I could piss off my parents more by doing a tech company than stand-up, because at least in stand-up, they know what that is, right? They just know you're a clown, right? But I said, like, I'm going to do a tech startup. And I'm like, boy, get your ass. Like, what the hell are you calling me? Tech startup. I don't like the sound of that. I do not like the sound of that shit. So I used to do stand-up comedy. I went to college in New York University. So when you go to college at NYU, it's like every day is an existential question of how do I skip class to piss off my parents? Like, what do you do when you're not at class? And so I went to business school, but I didn't learn anything in business school about running a business. I learned everything I know about business doing stand-up comedy.
Really?
Right. So, because stand-up is the only art form that you have to practice in front of a crowd.
you can paint in your room and write in your room and sing in your room. A lot of musicians, they spend a lot of their time alone in their room because they're shredding, they're practicing, right? But with stand-up, you know, it doesn't matter how smart you are, how funny, you have to, like, literally the moment you have the joke, you have to go and tell it to a crowd of strangers, hopefully, to see if they laugh, right? Because that's the art of stand-up, is making other people laugh, right? And so even if you're a psychopath talking to yourself in the mirror, like, how's it going, guys? Nobody's there. Your roommate's calling the police. Like, this guy's out of his goddamn mind. And so you can't do it even if you're insane, because then you don't get the laughter. So it forces you to, like, put yourself in this position where you're constantly generating ideas. As soon as you generate an idea, you have to go and test it out. And even the best jokes start as bad jokes, because even if you have the right idea for a joke, it kind of, like, there's a thousand little things that can go wrong. Right? The setup's wrong, the timing's wrong, the tone is wrong, the word that you use there is not as funny as this other word, and you're testing that out by doing the joke many different times, many different ways,
yeah,
with a bunch of different crowds, which is why New York is a great place to do stand-up, because you just, like, literally stack up, like, six shows a day, just, like, back to back to back at different
That's
bars.
That's not exhausting at all.
No, you start at 2 p.m. Like, imagine the kind of degenerates that go to a comedy show on a Wednesday at 2 p.m. Like,
maybe it's tourists. They didn't know what else to do.
Oh, there's not tourists, man. It's like tourists from, like, the homeless shelter. Like, there's people who got, like, laid off of work.
Just trying to get warm.
Yeah, no. If you, like, make somebody move in the crowd, be like, oh, that person's not dead. I got this, man. This guy's not dead. I brought him back. Terrible. So you get yourself in this, like, habit of, like, just constantly having to test and, like, make, like, critical impact with the market. You know what I mean? And so when I was a junior in college, I got this job with this Forbes author. We were interviewing a bunch of tech founders, and he wanted a guy who was, like, a little bit funny to make his interviews, like, punch him up, like, write funny articles about the interviews. I got the job, And when we interviewed these tech founders, the way that they described building their companies and their products was very similar to what I was doing in stand-up to me. You have an idea, even if the idea is in the right general direction, is so wrong on so many different levels, a thousand little ways that you don't know until you make that critical touch point with the market, with your users.
Right.
So the biggest takeaway I thought is, like, these guys launch fast, they get feedback fast, exactly like I do. So I thought maybe I could get addicted to that. And that's aside from a lot of other differences in stand-up. But, like, 80% of it is just getting on stage. 20% of it is actually the quality of the work. So the best stand-up comedians are also the best marketeers. The best people are, like, salespeople. So it's like you're doing sales, marketing, everything that you really need to, like, operations.
Yeah.
You're learning so much about business. And so I kind of started slowly getting addicted to building tech products. And by the time I graduated college, I said, hey, mom, I'm doing a tech startup. And she had, like, the chancla ready to go to slap my ass with it, you know?
The what?
The chancla. So Latino moms, they take, like, they have, like, a weapon that they keep in their feet. It's like a sandal thing.
Oh, flip-flops?
Yeah, like a flip-flop. They call it a chancleta, dude. As soon as you see that chancleta coming, dude, it's a terrorist attack, man. They're gonna screw your ass up.
Flying across.
Yeah, no, they get you, man.
I seen a TikTok where it's his wife would just chunk. You know how they put the cup on the head and hit it with the belt?
Yeah, the chancleta, dude.
She chunked the flip-flop and was hit the thing
from
clear across
the
room. Oh, man. She was
it's
brutal.
Scary, dude.
The chain clip.
I had to be brave to do that shit, man.
Yeah.
Tell that lady that, oh, hey, listen, man, I'm going to not take a job anymore. Like, she's like, what? You like getting the thing right.
Reaching down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, ducking for cover.
You can only imagine the reaction.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Now, does she live in New York? Or?
No, she lives in the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
So I'm from the Dominican Republic, born and raised.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a long line of pineapple farmers.
Okay.
And then I came here finished my high school in Miami.
Yeah.
Where I met two of my co-founders. My parents were like, we're going to send this kid off to, like, a Jesuit school because maybe the priest will figure it out. You know what I mean? Maybe they'll, you know, like,
put some Jesus in there.
Yeah, they'll put some, like, hallelujah kind of Holy Spirit dance and, like, fix him up. It didn't work, right? Like, and I finished my high school in Miami. Met two of my co-founders there, and then I went to college at NYU, and I stayed in America, baby. I'm here.
So for those who aren't familiar, what is Rilla Voice?
Yeah, so Rilla Voice, very succinctly, we are the leading speech analytics software for the home improvement industry. And what that means is when technicians, comfort advisors, sales reps, design consultants, when they go out and they talk to customers in the home to try to service something or sell something, they record their conversations on the Rilla Voice mobile app from their phones or tablets. And then we use AI to automatically transcribe, analyze, and give them feedback to help them improve their sales. and to help their sales managers or service managers do what we call virtual ride-alongs that are 100 times faster, better, and more productive.
So explain that. But how well does that pick it? Like, you have to have the phone, like, right here. You have to have your Bluetooth in your ear.
I'm recording you right now, man. It's in my pocket. You just, really? Like, keep it in your pocket and boom.
It still picks it up well enough.
It picks up well. Well, what happened was, you guys were talking about ChatGPT, right? So before ChatGPT came out, the industry standard, or like the state of the art for transcription. I mean, if people have used their iPhone's transcription, it's pretty garbage, right? Because the state of the art accuracy was like 70 to 80% accuracy, which sounds good, but when you read something in a transcript, people are used to reading books, right? Like, written things that make sense. Imagine you're reading a book and like 2 out of every 10 words are wrong. So every sentence has like 2 words that are wrong. You're like, this book sucks, right? This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And so when OpenAI came out with this thing called Whisper, it's a transcription model that's like 95 to 99% accurate. So it's better than a human being at transcribing audio. Right. So when they came out with that, we essentially had the opportunity to allow our customers to put their phone in their pocket and transcribes picks up everything. Because even if you can't hear the audio very well, the AI will predict with a 95% accuracy what it is that the customer is saying.
Oh, so it'll just the word before, the word after. And
it'll complete, because that's what ChatGPT is doing. The same model. It's trying to predict what the next word in the sentence is. And it's really, really good at doing that. So even if it hears something and it's not like, you know, like how it's noisy here. And imagine if I was recording this conversation here, it's going to be capturing all the noise. It's going to be doing a really good job at understanding the context and predicting with like 95% accuracy what's actually being said there, even if it didn't pick up the audio correctly. So it's almost like we have a customer. They have like, you know, they're a national brand. They have like, you know, and they were trying to understand, man, they had like this, they had this team in the South, man, in Atlanta. There was this guy, dude, with really thick Atlanta accent. And my customer was like, I don't know what the hell that guy's saying. He was just reading the transcription like subtitles, man. Like, just like, because the transcription does a better job than the human being
really
at picking up with accents.
Yeah.
So
they can get thick in Atlanta.
Oh, like if you want to test it out yourself, so the people watching or listening, if you look up whisper.ai, that they'll take you to the OpenAI page, and they have a little demo that you can play around with and listen to the audio. They have like one which is accents, which is like a Scottish accent.
Oh,
and I always play the game with people like, what is the Scottish man saying? And people are like, well, I don't know what that, like, it doesn't sound like English. And then the AI just transcribes it. It's a really fun, and it like transcribes multiple languages. It's kind of insane.
Yeah.
About the multiple languages, we had this one customer, right? And this is how scary smart this thing is. We had one customer who said like, hey man, I love your translation feature. And we said like, no, you mean transcription? He's like, no, translation. You know, I speak Spanish and my customer was speaking Spanish and it just translated it into English. And I was like, dude, I don't know what you're using. That's not my product. And I asked my engineers, I was like, did you guys do that? And it was like, no, dude, I did not do that. And the guy showed me, the AI itself understood that the conversation was in English, right? But then they started talking Spanish and it understood that for the transcription, I had to translate it into English.
And it just automatically moved.
It just did it on its own.
Wow.
So it's insane. It's really good, man. Thank you. Thank you to OpenAI. We appreciate you guys. Thank you.
That's cool.
How long ago was that Whisper came out?
Whisper came out like a month before ChatGPT.
Okay.
So it's like last year.
Because there's
November.
Been, I've seen AI tools, but of course now it's like, it's an explosion, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's, and we talked with, Tyson recently, and
Tyson from Avoca.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that kid.
Yeah, he's good.
He was MIT.
I was texting him yesterday.
Yeah. Well, and he was telling us like some of the stuff. Like, obviously, ChatGPT is really advanced. Or OpenAI, I should say, is really advanced everything. But this stuff's been in progress, like behind the scenes. Like, we haven't seen it. Like, you talked about yesterday with usually tech companies, and then home services was kind of like 5 years behind.
Yes,
it. We're finally seeing this before a lot of other people are seeing it.
Yeah.
Why is that?
So this is an interesting point that I was talking about yesterday. So the reason you have people like me, people like Tyson, people like, you know, like the people from Buck AI, people like Pro Dispatch, there's a lot of AI tools that are coming after home services specifically, a lot of early stage startups that are enabled by this new foundational technology, right? And they're literally here talking to contractors in the trades, like Tyson's from MIT, right?
Right.
Like, these kids would typically go to Silicon Valley, try to sell to tech companies, but that's not
happening
right now.
It's so funny because I reached out to Tyson, and then all of a sudden we had a phone call, and now it's like every day we're texting, and he's asking questions, and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm glad.
Yeah. So there's like, a lot of attention
I didn't expect that.
From people that are traditionally not interested in these industries. There's a lot of attention because of a lot of market dynamics. The main one being is, for the first time, I guess in like more, it's like probably like 30 years, a new technology was developed that came out into market while we had a high interest rate environment, right? So like when the internet got developed, it was low interest rates, right? Yeah. When CRMs came out, it was low interest rates. When you know, SEO and all these things came out, low interest rates. For the past 15 years, we've been in a low interest rate environment. So when there's low interest rates, the price of the future is zero, right? Because if you keep your money in the bank, your money's not gonna grow. So it's very easy to invest in risky assets that are future looking, like, you know, tech startups or tech companies, right? When interest rates go up, the first people who take the brunt of the interest rate hike is the tech companies. That's why you see Facebook laying off people, Google laying off people, early stage startups.
Well, and the one bank failed.
Yeah, the Silicon Valley Bank, first bank that failed, right? It's all because of the interest rate hike. They really feel the pain of interest rate hikes because the industry is always like future looking. You know, when people talk about Uber, all the profits are in the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they go red for years before they ever actually realize it.
So if your profits are all in the future and now the future is priced, you know, and you have a 10% interest on the future, right? Because you could keep your money in the bank. All of a sudden, you suffer a lot. And so typically, whenever there's been interest rate hikes, it was never at the same time, coincidentally, that our new technology like AI was like out in market to the full force that we have OpenAI. So then what happened was the VCs, they have the venture capitalists who fund tech companies like mine and Tyson's, they typically like to fund tech companies that would sell to other tech companies because low interest rate environment, tech companies, they have all the money. Now, tech companies have no money. They're laying off people. They're not making investments. They're like just trying to keep the lights on, right? Whether you're an early stage or late stage startup, you're just like literally trying to keep the lights on if you're in Silicon Valley. It's a really bad time to be in Silicon Valley right now. But VCs, they want to fund AI. They want to say like, this is a transformational technology. This is going to have reverberating impacts across society. It's going to be world changing. And we have all the money to fund it, but we can't fund people that are going after sell other tech companies. We have to fund tech companies that sell outside of tech. And home improvement contractors are at the top of the pecking order in the industries that they're looking for outside of tech. And the reason for that is COVID, right? People living in houses more than ever versus apartments, people spending more time at home than ever. If you're spending more time at home, your appliances are going to be used more. They're going to break more. They're going to wear and tear. You're going to notice the pains of being in a home that you don't like, a particular area. So there's the market for home improvement, home remodeling, home services is the biggest it's ever been, right? Like people, you know, you're a contractor, you know the COVID years, right? It's like order taking. It's like,
everyone wanted a new air conditioner.
It's literally the gold rush of San Francisco, right? Like in the early 1900s. And so the home, the American home has become the biggest sales and marketing channel probably in American history outside of the internet, right? And so the venture capitalists, just like the private equity people, right? Think about all these private equity people who, all these suits from New York and Silicon Valley. Why are they so interested in acquiring HVAC businesses all of a sudden, right? It's because of
it blew up.
So it blew the hell
like
up.
It's like a perfect storm, really. Like almost everything happened in a perfect storm for our industry.
And it's at the same time that AI happened, right? Because AI happened.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if that does, like obviously, you know, COVID stuff happened, but AI also happened
at the same time. So there's all the money happening in the home. The private equity people want it. The VCs want a piece of it. What do? They say, Sebastian, you know how to talk to these contractors. Why don't we go and sell them AI? You know what I mean? Tyson, why don't we go and... So for the first time ever, home improvement contractors who usually were kind of laggards in terms of technology adoption, they had...
Kind of. There's still companies. There's probably companies here still using pen and paper.
Pen and paper. They haven't even adopted CRM, right?
I have some clients on pen and paper, so
right,
I know exactly
what
QuickBooks has their CRM.
Yeah.
And that's been the thing, like with the internet, with SEO, you know, there's still people that don't even understand how to get SEO up and running. SEO is a technology that's existed for like 20 years. CRM, the same thing, right? And now for the first time, we have a technology that's transformational that's coming after home improvement first. So it's almost like the laggards are forced to be the early adopters, which is a wild development and really exciting, really scary. So, but yeah, that's kind of what's
happening. So with that being said, how has the response been to people who are like, I don't trust that. Or like, I don't know about recording the entire conversation, or like technicians that are like, screw that. I don't want to have Big Brother.
Yeah. So great question. So I'll answer the question in two parts because one is more Rilla related. The other one's like kind of like more AI related. So Rilla related question. Every time you launch Rilla, every single time we've done this with like thousands of technicians and government advisors at this point, every single time they absolutely hate this, right? Every single time. Like the top, every single day. So that, without a doubt, like,
that's all new stuff with technicians, though. Tersh and I were talking about that last night or this morning. Like, if it's not easy, technicians won't do it.
Oh, but it's not even, for Rilla, it's not even that it's not, because Rilla is really simple. Like, it's just like literally press a button, just boom, that's it. You have to talk, and that's it. It actually makes their lives much simpler, I can talk about later. It's just even the concept. It's just like,
you're going to listen to what I say in the home. I don't want my boss to know what I say in the home.
It's not even about being easy. It was like, hey, get the hell out of here, man. What the hell you think you're doing, man? This is a violation of my human rights, man. I'm quitting. This is a bunch of BS.
Like, to lose labor, like, have people actually quit?
So what we've seen is that sometimes companies that are larger companies, you're usually going to see maybe like 2% attrition rate. So like some 2% of people might quit over this. If you have a larger company, if you have a smaller company, it's not, it doesn't tend to happen. Usually it's not the top performers who quit. It's usually the people who are already like,
they were skating by they're like,
and they're like, okay, this is
now
it.
Now I actually have to do my
so
job.
It's usually around 2% what we see, but it's not all the time. But when it happens, it's around 2% of the technician workforce who like actually ends up leaving. But what we see is every single time we see this, the top performers, they actually hate this more than everybody else at the beginning, because the tool is by design. It's designed to look at what the top performers are doing differently to share it with everybody else, right? That's what our tool does. They don't like that.
They don't like spilling the beans.
Just sharing their secrets, right? Especially you're competing for leads. The best people get the best leads, so they don't like sharing their secrets, right? It's their money, so I get it, right? Then the middle performers are concerned, and then the people at the bottom, depending on and then the new people certainly embrace it. Like the people who
they don't know any different.
They don't know any different. They embrace it immediately. And then what we see is that after they spend about a week recording their conversations, they almost like forget that they're being recorded, right? It's this effect in psychology. It's called the Hawthorne effect. When you know you're being studied or reviewed or recorded, your senses are in fight or flight because you're just like, somebody's watching. It's like when you're public speaking, right? You know that somebody's watching. And your brain can't stay in fight or flight for a long time because it gets tired. So then after like 5 recordings, you see that like, the fear goes away completely and they just start recording the meetings. And then after a month, because the tool works and technicians and comfort advisors become 30 to 40% better at selling because they have a supercomputer in their pocket telling them exactly what to say it so you can close more deals. You see, guys, we have this guy, Taylor. We have a side-by-side video of him like at Rilla Launch saying like, this is a bunch of BS, man. I'm never going to use this, okay? You're never going to get me. AI is the devil. AI is a demon. I'm not going to use it ever. And then we have a video of him like a month later. It'd be like, Taylor, what'd you think of Rilla? Like, honestly, man, like you guys have been doing great, great work with us, man. You know, his conversion rates were up like 40%. He's like, listen, man, I actually enjoy looking at the analytics, man. Oh, you guys said this is one of the best sales tools I've ever used, man. Oh, honestly, thank you guys so much. And we're like, thank you, Taylor. But that's every single time that we do it, it happens that way. He's like, everyone's like, oh my God, he got, And then you'd use it, and I was like, oh, okay. And then it's like, oh, okay.
It's designed to help. It's not designed to hurt or catch.
Yeah.
I mean, you may catch some stuff, but it's designed to help. So everybody's better, and the client experience in the home is better.
Yeah, what we typically see is that when we have like a beautiful graph, I wish I could show it to people, which is that like we divide people by top performers, middle performers, and bottom performers. And what you see every single time with Rilla, like on average, the gap between your top performers and everybody else, let's say you have a top performing comfort advisor that closes $5 million in revenue and your average closes 2, what you see is that $3 million gap every single time with Rilla after a quarter, it gets reduced by more than half, right? So about more than $1.5 million because everybody's learning. And then the top performers typically get 5 to 15% better. Not as much as the people at the bottom, but they still improve because these are naturally the people that want to learn and improve. And they're already like in that
mindset.
They're
like, well, if I'm at 5, I want to get to 6.
Yeah,
They're already motivated.
That gap closes. Are you saying that the top numbers come down or the bottom?
No, the bottom
comes down.
Okay.
Everybody goes down with Rilla, man. Everybody loses money. No, the bottom reps and the middle reps go
and it's
up.
Interesting. So we talked to Brigham Power Selling Pros. I know you guys talked this week.
Yes.
Because AI gets looked at as replacement. Yes. That's like the first thing on people's mind. Because one,
which is true.
Managing, training people is hard.
Yes.
It's a hard business.
Yeah.
And Brigham brought some great points to the episode this morning, and it was more about the enhancement. And that's where you guys are focused, right?
Yeah. So like you look at a tool like Tyson, like Avoca.ai, and that's like full replacement, right? Right. It's like the call center is going to be replaced by this AI. That's his mission, right? That's what they're doing. Ours is more, and there's the two types, right? Both valid, right? Ours is more like, how do we enhance the natural capabilities of human beings, right? So, and that's why we focus so much on the people in the field, because when people think about AI, GPT chat, or like, you know, like they conflate it with robots, right? They just start thinking of like Terminator and be like, we're all gonna die, man. We're like, yeah, like
I robot.
Yeah. They start thinking of like, oh, GPT chat is like robot. It's like, no, two different things. ChatGPT is a large language model. It understands language really well, which is really good for a tool like mine, for call centers, for stuff like that. But robot, it can't do this. Like, what? It can't pick up an object. It can't grip. It doesn't have a physical understanding of space, right, and time like we do, right? It doesn't understand 3D well yet, right? And robotics is way far behind still. We don't have a mechanism to even imagine how a robot could like walk up to a house, open a door, shake a hand, look at a unit, take a picture. Like, we're still, ChatGPT means nothing for that, right? Even if it becomes the smartest thing ever, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean that it'll translate to being able to. So our bet for the future of Rilla and the future of the industry is that you will need, there's gonna be more people going into blue collar work. Because a lot of the work that's getting replaced is actually white collar work, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
People thought that blue collar work was going to be replaced first, but it's, you're a lawyer, you're out of a job.
Yeah, the ChatGPT can do better on the bar exam than you can.
Exactly. You're a doctor, you just in debt, you don't have a job.
Congrats, you went to 8 years of medical school and you're out of a job.
But what it can't do is it can't do plumbing.
Right.
It can't service repair.
Fine, yeah, fine
it can't it
work.
Can't go and shake a hand and talk to a customer face to face. So our way of approaching this at Rilla, we say these jobs are not going to go away. They're actually going to increase now more than ever, because you're going to see a lot of people getting out of law school going into trades, by the way. But you still want to bring AI and technology to help these people do their jobs 100 times better. Right, and 100 times faster. So enhance the natural capabilities of human beings, right? So that's a Rilla is an example, right? A sales manager or service manager without Rilla, they have to spend 6 hours to do a ride along with one person. With Rilla's AI, they can do a ride along with their entire team of 10 technicians in like less than an hour. You see what I'm saying? Because the AI gives them everything they need to understand what actually happened in the conversation.
So can you walk us through the process on like, for me, I haven't done a demo
right
with Rilla.
Yeah.
Explain it.
Yeah. So here's how it works, right? So Rilla integrates with your systems, right? So
is it with pretty much all of them?
All of the field service management systems that you could think of, like the most popular ones, like, yeah, Service Titan, you know, like all those guys. So what happens is the technician goes to the home, right? They get dispatched. They press record on their phone or tablet.
So they don't press it until they arrived at the house.
Well, until they arrive, right? And we're connected to their systems to make sure that they're pressing record when they arrive and stuff like that, because we're connected to their entire system. And then all they have to do is press record, right? And it's automatically synced to everything. And then it's not a recording tool. It's an AI tool that's going to take that recording. It's going to transcribe it using speech to text. And it's not a transcription tool. It's an analytics tool that's going to take those transcriptions and use natural language processing powered by GPT-4, by ChatGPT, to understand what happened in that conversation. So what happened and how did it happen, right? Not only what happened, but how did it happen? So like, to give you an idea, you know, when a service manager goes on a ride along, they're going to do the curbside pickup form, right? If people have heard about that, it's like when a service manager goes out there and sees if the technician offered the good, better, best options, if they offered the replacement, if they build rapport with a customer, if they try to have the conversation at the kitchen table, if they explain financing, the membership, right? That they do all of those things, check, right? Human being would have to do that manually.
Oh yeah.
With Rilla, the AI, you just tell it like, hey, here's my sales script. Here's my service process. Tell me which one of these things they did and which ones they didn't. And it just gives you a score automated. So right after the conversation, the technicians gets a score like, oh, you did all of these right things, but you missed these ones, right? And then beyond that, and that's insane already, because it automated that entire job of like having to go on a ride along and having to do that manually. But the other thing it does is it starts looking at how the top performers talk in a company specifically. How they talk is their talk ratio, how much they talk versus the customer, right? How fast do they talk? How many questions do they ask? And it looks at what they say specifically. Do they build rapport? Do they talk about pricing? When do they talk about pricing? And it starts recommending those conversational best practices to everybody else in the team so they can kind of be more like the top performers.
What happens? Okay, so what if you have a really small team?
Yeah.
And everybody sucks.
Yeah, so.
You're gone. See ya.
Yeah, man.
Will there ever be a point where you're like, hey, this company over here, and you're not going to name the company, but
right.
We see that they do this and this is successful. And
so we don't do that yet. And that most of that is for data privacy reasons. Like we don't share data across companies because our customers own their data. Right. So Rilla works really well if you have at least 5 people on your team, that's when it's going to work really well. Anything less than 5 is going to be difficult to make it work. Because
you're just not gonna have enough data to actually.
Yeah, so like imagine you're like analytics. One person. There's not gonna be a comparison database because if you think about it for the technician, what Rilla is doing is it's actually allowing you to learn not only from your own trial and error but from the trial and error of the entire team. So if you have 10 people on your team, now you 10x your rate of learning because the AI is aggregating the entire learning of the entire team and giving it to you, and it's in everybody's hands. You see what I'm saying? If you're just one person. It's valuable, don't get me wrong, because you're going to get everything you're transcribed, accounted for, you're going to get some feedback, but it's not going to be as powerful as when you can literally generalize the entire intelligence of the entire team and put it in the palm of everybody's hands, right? So at least 5 people is when we see that it really pops and it becomes a really sticky product.
No, it's good to know.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say this. So we use CallRail for all of our digital marketing clients.
Yep.
And I didn't even realize they had like alpha features available. I finally signed up for it. And then one day I log in and they have this Alpha Labs thing, which was essentially what you're talking about, but on the phone call side where it's transcription. They do the analytics, like kind of literally it says you did this well.
Yep.
You didn't do this well. Here's like the full summary.
Yep.
And being able to, and literally it happens like the call's over and like within a couple minutes it's available.
Yeah.
It's not available to like use some sort of thing to pull out. Customers actually have to go into CallRail, which they don't do. Even though
there's
we can't log in.
There's a great one
so
called.
If you're listening to your customer, go log into CallRail because it's there. But it's very neat to me to see this stuff because it's that instant feedback. Because otherwise, like we have a whole team that listens to calls and we do that now for clients, seeing what that's going to look like. Not only just giving you, like, okay, this was a bookable lead, you didn't book it, that sort of thing. It's like, why?
We have the exact same thing for our podcast episodes. As soon as we're finished and uploaded,
summarizes it. It transcribes
all that, but it also tells us what we should have done better to have a more engaging.
Yeah. What's that tool called? I feel like I've heard of it.
Cast Magic.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I'm pretty sure all the feedback's on your end. I'm perfect.
Nope.
You're the top performer. Guy who needs to bridge the gap.
Have you signed in yet? To all the people who haven't signed in. Joshua.
Grace from my team signed in so she can clip it all together.
No, but it's true. Like a lot of these solutions have existed before for the call center because again, it was pre ChatGPT AI, which was different. For the call center, there's like a great tool called Balto, which you could like literally do real time analysis. So it's like not even after the fact. It's like your call center people are talking and they get like literally like feedback in real time about what to say to the customer right there in the moment.
So what is it called?
Balto.ai. Balto.ai. Awesome company. Great company. And
isn't the podcast great? We can learn to get better at our own businesses while we're trying to help all of you.
So Balto, I would say, is awesome, which they also come at it from the same angle as Rilla does, which is like we're going to enhance the natural capabilities of your human being. Tyson, Avoca, and Balto's like much, higher, like at a later stage than Avoca. Avoca's like really like new, right? Because it's enabled by ChatGPT. Avoca's like a completely like, hey, we're just going to replace your call center, which is like kind of crazy, right? But Balto's like a really good solution for human CSRs to use real time, get feedback. It's an awesome tool. And you see like some of the similar gains that you see when using Rilla
in
the field.
And it's wild to me because there's different places in the market. Like there's going to be some companies that want to replace their call. I've seen.
Yeah.
Some clients and some other people in the trade, like we put this stuff out there and they're like, I need this in my life yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. People like they just that's the way they're going to go. And then there's going to be people that are like, well, I love my people. I want to keep them and I want to make it better.
It's going to depend on the use cases, right? So like, because. So it goes back to that stand-up thing, right? In concept, you have an amazing joke that works, but then you test it out in the market and you see that, you know, based on the reaction of the crowd, you see that you have to take it in a different direction, right? So, like, you take a tool like Avoca, right? My bet, and again, I'm not running the company, so I have no idea. This is just me betting as an outsider, that the easiest use case for them to tackle initially will be, like, the simple calls. Like, okay, let's replace our reschedule calls. Let's replace our appointment confirmation.
Or answering services.
Or answering services, things like right? That. So, like, make it more human-like. Make it simple. Make it useful, right? And it's going to be a transition period.
They say your name of your company correctly.
Right.
That's so many times I listen to a call, an after-hours call, and they'll say the wrong name, like straight up wrong name. I'm like,
or they'll make up names for
your
text.
You see those simple wins that you can get by replacing, and then maybe what you'll have is like tools like Balto for the more complex, like kind of like where you actually need somebody, where the AI kind of can't get there yet because it's gonna be like a longer call, like somebody calls to complain about like a callback or something like that, you know. So there's gonna be a transition period where the two tools are gonna be existing. Like you're gonna need both, like you know, a Balto and an Avoca. And there may be, I have no idea, but maybe you'll have a hybrid where it's like in the future, what the natural equilibrium would be is that the AI automates like 90% of it, but the 10% of it that really matters will still be done by a human being. I don't know, but
that sounds logical to me.
But in the call center, it's the first space that a lot of people are going to try to completely automate it, which is kind of insane. You know?
I'd be worried if I was a call center.
Yeah. I'd be worried too.
If I worked for one.
Yeah.
Well, because that error.ai I know is out there. I'm sure there's other technologies
out there.
There's
a lot of money at it, man.
And we look at like small companies, they're looking at like the AT&Ts and the outbound side of things. Companies that have tens of thousands of reps.
I mean, imagine somebody cracks that code, right? Like you get somebody in your market, right? They have a 24/7 answering service where it doesn't matter. And their call center is literally answered by the top performer always, on point, doesn't get tired, doesn't get cranky, doesn't get upset, doesn't have to sleep, doesn't ask for benefit. Imagine you're competing against that because they figured it out. You know what I mean? And that's the scary thing that people think like, oh, you know, CRMs, I got like 10 years to let other people figure it out. Well, no, because first thing is, it's actually coming after the home services first. And second thing, AI is developing faster than any other technology that's ever happened.
As soon as we did two presentations on it, between the two and they were a week apart.
Yeah.
Like there was like our entire presentation had to be changed.
Yeah, because
in 1 week.
Because everything like ChatGPT came out, right? September, October 2022. 3 months later, ChatGPT-4 comes out, which is an order of magnitude better than ChatGPT.
Well, now there's multimodal. There's the voice text, or you can talk to it.
Progress is happening in weeks, not years. It's weeks, and so it's getting much better. So, okay, if you test something like Avoca, it's kind of like maybe it doesn't replace the full thing. Like, okay, maybe
give
not
it a
now.
Week.
Give it a few weeks. You know what I mean? Like, what?
Yeah.
So that's kind of crazy. So I would say, like, you know, to everybody out there, the main thing that you could be doing is keeping your ears closed. I know
don't put your head in the grass.
Yes.
You know, don't put your head in the sand.
Yeah, because you have to be and also try to take the because the top people who are gonna become the industry leaders are gonna be the people who manage to incorporate these technologies into their business workflow, similar to what happened with SEO, right? The people who got on it first and mastered it first, they became the dominant players. And they replace a lot of the slower, kind of older players who didn't get up to speed, right? They dominated the market.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was in the industry whenever that happened.
Yeah.
And there were other companies that were much larger than us, but wouldn't get off of pen and paper.
Right.
Like yellow pages.
Are some of those companies are
gone? All of them gone. And they were way bigger than what we were.
Yep.
And now the company that I was at, they're the largest company in town.
Yep.
By far.
Peter Thiel said to Mark Zuckerberg when he was thinking about dropping out of Harvard to go on Facebook full time. Peter Thiel said to him, he was one of the investors in Facebook, he said, in a world that changes so fast and technology developing so rapidly, the biggest risk you can take is taking no risk at all, right? because
that's deep.
That's actually a great lesson, because that's literally what I mean. We're here at Tommy Mello's event, and everybody's seen Tommy. Everyone thinks it's an overnight success story, right? Because he's been at this a while.
No.
The exponential growth now that he's really been able to, like, he knows what he wants and he goes and gets it.
Yeah.
But he keeps testing.
He's willing to fail. He's willing to be the early adopter. That's what I was talking about. It's like people are used to being the laggard mindset where everything's like cool, everything works.
I'll wait until everyone else figures it out. Then I'll jump on.
Put it on cruise control.
But damn, dude, but the early adopters get the market. You know what I mean? They win it. So, and they're okay, right? Some experiments are going to fail. Some of these, like, look at what happened with crypto, right? Like, people was like, oh, my God, crypto. You know, it went in the toilet, right? It thought it was a rocket ship. It was the toilet, right? It didn't work. Some of it's not going to work, right? And that's fine, because the early adopter's fine with it. It's like, oh, you take your losses. But if I lose 10 out of, 11 times, but the one time it works, that's when you win the market. Man. You see what I'm saying?
Well, that's what being an entrepreneur is all about.
Yeah.
And some people, the business owns them.
If you're afraid of it, get a fucking job.
Literally. I mean, it has to be that way. I mean, obviously, don't be stupid, but you have to take some risk in order to get the rewards. That's why it's always called risk reward.
Jeff Bezos said this great, and I think we operate with this in mind at Rilla, that invention, there is no invention, there is no innovation without failure. If you do something and you know with 100% certainty that it's going to go okay, there's no innovation there. You just know how to do that, right? But when you fail, there's no way to figure something new out without failing. And he also said that it's like when you actually look at experiments are very cheap, actually, for you to test out something really quickly. Things only become really expensive when they work. You know what I mean? Because that's when you start building departments around it and you start scaling it because you actually know it works. Experimenting is actually not that expensive. It's very cheap. It's just the thing that keeps people from doing it. It's just the pain of the suffering of the failure because they don't like when things don't work out. But it's actually not that costly, right, to do the experiments and to test things out, you know?
That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Sebastian, where can people get a demo of Rilla if they're interested?
Go to rillavoice.com. It is R-I-L-L-A voice. .com.
You mean you have a .com? You don't have a fancy .ai or .io or .co or whatever the hell is fancy these days?
No, we got a .com, son. We old school, man. We got a .com.
We old school. We're like 4 years old. not a year old.
Yeah, man. I'm in between. Right in between the Gen Z and the millennials, dude. I'm like the oldest person in my company, dude. All my kids, it's like Peter Pan and the Lost Boys, dude. It's like we got a bunch of 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds, and they look at me and it's like, dude, you're 27, dude. You're a dad. You're a father, dude.
Damn, man, you old.
So rillavoice.com and click on the book a demo link and you can talk to one of our highly trained sales executives who have been trained with the latest in AI technology. And you tell us how we did.
Is it a person or AI?
It's a person still.
I'll let you try to figure that out.
But maybe
that'll be the trick.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe Tyson can help me with that, Fire all my salespeople.
Tyson, if you're listening to this.
Good thing you're not. Hopefully you're not listening
Tyson,
to this.
Tyson, help me out, man. Tell me out.
That's awesome.
Sebastian, we really appreciate you.
Absolutely, man. This was fun.
This is cool. Yeah. If y'all have any questions, rillavoice.com, or if you have a question for Josh and I, servicebusinessmastery.com. And yeah, we look forward to talking to you again soon. We'll see
Peace.
You.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.